Thank you for inviting me. As I'm coming, I was thinking about what I was going to say. So I'm not going to talk about anything I don't know. I'm not an economist, but I have common sense. Africa cannot develop without socialism, and socialism cannot develop without Africa. I come from a generation that studied Mao, the Sino-Soviet split, the Gang of Four, Deng Xiaoping. You surround the cities don't come out to the countryside. So I think for those of us, at least in my generation, we started from a profound appreciation for China and the role of China in the world. And for African people and people of color, China represented a new road forward, because the first question, the very first question, is to liberate your nation. That's the very first question for African people, is to liberate Africa. The struggle is always first, what is liberation? What will that mean? How will it express itself? And so there was very early on the look towards China to see what China could do. With as many people as China had, how could China develop? It was socialism. It was socialism. It was socialism. You cannot develop without industrialization. You cannot develop without being able to feed the people. So the real impact of China's revolution from the very beginning was the enormous task China had, and then the lessons to be learned from that. So today, when I talked about what I would speak about, it's covered a broad range of issues and history and politics and ideology as it relates to the necessity to support China. For me, it manifests itself, and I wanted to talk about its relationship to Zimbabwe, because Zimbabwe, first historically, represents on the African continent the first time a liberation movement not only solved the first question, which was political power, but it was now confronted with the most important one, which is economics. How can you develop a country? It is a political economy that you develop. You cannot ever separate the two. So in Zimbabwe, what was the first question? It was a question of land. Who does the land belong to? And for decades and decades and decades, African people in Zimbabwe watched a settler colonial society with their land stolen and in their hands and their underdevelopment. And so China represented a road forward for the Zimbabwean people. And what was the concrete expression of that road forward? It wasn't lip service. It wasn't talking. It was giving them the weapons that they needed to fight for their liberation. As everyone knows, the AK-47 was the general weapon of the end of colonialism. It fired in all conditions. In fact, it showed the superiority over the M16, which used to always jam with American soldiers in the war. But you could put the AK-47 in mud and bring it back up and it still fought, which was once again demonstrating the superiority of socialism over capitalism. Now, it might seem like a small thing unless you're in the bush getting ready to attack a colonial settler encampment, but it's very critical. The Chinese gave the liberation movements arms to liberate themselves, fundamental and key. I've been to China on a number of occasions. Probably the most beautiful occasion I had was on my way to Pyongyang. And let me tell you about the train ride. I think it was like 23 hours. You know, but one of the things it did, you can't really understand a country that's developing by looking at the city. You have to go to the countryside where the culture is, where the people are struggling to take science over the elements to produce. So I had a chance to go across China by train. I don't necessarily recommend it. There is the plane, but it's an experience to see the peasants in the countryside come to the train and get supplies and stuff. And you kind of say to yourself, boy, what a different life it would be if I lived here. When I wake up in the morning, what would the agenda be? When I go to bed at night, what would the agenda be? But it did give me a sense of the enormity of China, just the enormity of China, and therefore the task that the only thing that could resolve its development was the building of a party, a organization, weapon, an instrument to organize the people. And so I think that was the other contribution that China made to the developing liberation movements, was the necessity of a party. And that party, not one to apply ideology and politics from someone else to you, but a party that the principles were the same, but it must be applied in the concrete analysis of concrete conditions. And so my experience in terms of traveling in China and talking with the people in China, we're very close friends with the ambassador from Ghana to China, who's based in Beijing, and his own analysis of what was happening in China and the benefits of that translated to the Ghanaian people were important. So China was a beacon to national liberation straight ahead. China survived the outcome of the Sino-Soviet split because we know what happened with the demise of the Soviet Union. Just straight up, China represented a road forward for us against revisionism and backing off the question that people make revolution. In fact, we all remember countries want independence, nations want liberation, the people want revolution. And so those were lessons that were really burned into the minds and hearts of people in the liberation struggles. So for Zimbabwe, what did that mean? For me, my experiences in Zimbabwe certainly started under President Robert G. Mugabe, who actually helped build the Zimbabwe Revolutionary Party and participated in its leadership. In fact, for China, China and Zimbabwe's, I guess, relationship after the liberation struggle, I think it's next year, it'd be 45 years of the relationship between China and Zimbabwe in terms of an independent, two independent countries. But for Zimbabwe, the question was, once they decided to take the land, everything changed then. I dare you take from me what I already took from you, and you have the nerve to say it belongs to you. That motion to take back the land created a groundswell around Western governments on, I dare some Africans to take something from us. And what that led to has been over 20 years of sanctions. And so what if sanctions meant, I think, when, and us talking about sanctions, most of the countries under sanctions are in Africa, right, Sarah? That's right, they're in Africa, you know? But in Zimbabwe, the purpose of the sanctions was to send a message to the rest of Africa. Don't you dare think about taking your resources back. That is a no-no. And so this crippling years of sanctions, what has it been its impact? Sanctions is a new atom bomb and hydrogen bomb. It stops you from being able to participate in the global economy. It stops you from being able to get things that you don't produce that are critically needed in terms of healthcare, in terms of agricultural products, all of the things you need to build a country. That's what the sanctions are there to do. And as they said in Washington one time for Zimbabwe, is to make their economy scream. And if it screams and it's loud enough, the people will now say to themselves, this government can no longer serve me any place but here. And so China plays now the most critical role in Zimbabwe. It was President Mugabe who developed the policy, a very critical policy that much of Africa is following now, which is the look east policy. To look east and not have to look for anything that has to do with development, industry, let's not forget spare parts. Because whatever you have, when it breaks, where's the spare part going to come from? And so China's role in that was critical in giving Zimbabwe an ability to fight the sanctions, to win a victory over the sanctions. It was China's support. And to this very day, right now, it is that solidarity between Zimbabwe and China, reflected in the Forum on China and Africa Cooperation that just took place a little while ago. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, the new president in Zimbabwe, had a conference with the president of China. And in that conference, they talked about the benefits of their relationship, the concrete benefits. Now, first and foremost, I'm a Pan-Africanist. So we'll be clear about that. I'm a Pan-Africanist. I can't participate in solving the world's problems and not thinking about the priority of African problems. So let me tell you how this manifests itself. There are many people in our community, there are many people in the African community who view China as a new colonizer. They view the relationship of China to Africa as one of recolonization. And they raise this. There are two sides of that. One is the question of the feeling and the weakness of you don't control your own country. You haven't developed to that level. And so you're always leery of anyone who establishes any kind of business and financial relationships in your country. The other side of it is Western propaganda. Western propaganda. If you only read what the West writes, then you'll never, 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 ever see your human rights, ever. And so there's been a battle also in our community over presenting the China question in its proper presentation. One of those is there are no armies. There are no former colonies that China had in Africa, the starting point. But you know, one of the things sometimes we forget, and it's tragic, some people want to criticize countries and they can't even run their neighborhoods. They don't understand what it takes to run a country, to feed the people, to deal with their health care, their food, clothing, and shelter. Those are immense challenges. And so if you're going to talk about China and its relationship to Africa and specifically to Zimbabwe, what comes to mind is the question of that relationship is not perfect. As Gabral said, tell no lies and claim no easy victories. It's not perfect. There are places in Africa, none yet that I've observed so much far in Zimbabwe in particular, but where the Chinese businesses have been kicked out. They've been kicked out for unfair business practices. They've been kicked out for corruption and such. And what happens when that goes down? The Western propaganda machine takes one and makes it 10. It takes 20 and makes it 2,000. Corruption and mismanagement and racism, and those are part of the world fabric right now until we change it. But in the main, the far, far, far main, China has been exemplary in terms of development. There's a thing called concessional loans. Does anybody know what a concessional loan is? You do. Straight ahead, because I don't know what it meant. I was riding up here on the train. I wanted to know, Larry, what's a concessional loan? Because it said China is giving Africa these concessional loans. I said, well, what? You know, but they're fair trade loans. Loans that are not based on the extraction of a profit. In fact, they're not profitable loans. They're loans that are more tied to the question of services. China has engaged in so many different concessional loans for people who say the debt that Africa gets into with China because of the loans are just simply China exploiting Africa. That's something that has to be defeated in the concrete. That's why I had to find out what's a concessional loan. I know what it was. But favorable meant not only not for profit, but the terms of paying it back. I guess one would say, those elements that are reflective of you getting the loan in the first place are minimized so that they can happen. So I've learned that when you want to talk about country-to-country relationships, it's not an abstract question. if you want to know, you have to really go and investigate that. It's not enough to go, yeah, everybody's down, but to actually look, because the efforts that China makes in Africa and the benefits that Africa gets in its contributions to China, because it's not a one-way street. Zimbabwe has one of the largest lithium resources in the world. Zimbabwe just have one of the greatest gold resources in the world. Zimbabwe, one of the main elements is tobacco. You know, although we always used to say that Mao smoked too much. We always said that. But the bottom line is a two-way street. But we should know what the street is, because they will, as things develop, and I think as the comrade who raised earlier spoke, this issue around nuclear war is a serious one. I told Sarah when she had written an article in a newspaper in China, when she talked about the ruling class in this country, and I told her that. I said, when she said it, I said, that's so true. They would rather see no world than a world without them. They can't even conceive of the idea of a world without them. And that's extremely dangerous. And I think, as the comrade pointed, Biden just realigned the strategic nuclear force in the United States toward its upcoming relationships and developments with China, which means they're preparing for war. They're preparing for war. And you almost say in your minds, how could somebody conceptualize that? But they're preparing. And so I think, as I said, socialism cannot exist without Africa, and Africa cannot exist without socialism. And so for Zimbabwe, tell no lies, claim no easy victories. They are struggling inside Zimbabwe for which way forward. The example of China is a very powerful one. One of the things that got exchanged in this recent forum on China-Africa was the idea of what has China's experience has been in party building? What's its experience has been on the question of party organization and development? Those are lessons you learn over time. And the Zimbabweans are taking up some of those lessons to help streamline how they serve the people in their country. In fact, their new party conference is getting ready to take place next month. They actually said, we've streamlined it. We've learned some lessons from China on how to be more efficient, how to be more organized, and therefore how to be more productive. Those kind of lessons are tremendous lessons in country-to-country relationships in that regard. And so I didn't come to like spew out numbers that I wouldn't know. You wouldn't know whether they're true or not true. I mean, if I said 29% of Zimbabwe's production went up last year, what would that mean? Should it have been 50? Or should it have been 15? You know what I mean? So I didn't really come that. I really came to just say that in my historical experience, in terms of the fight to build a party, the fight to build socialism, is that China is a weapon for the world's people against imperialism. And the Chinese people have demonstrated that this large amount of people, you know, and this just as an aside, people say the only country in the world that could survive a nuclear war would be China. So you almost say to yourself, the madness of American and Western imperialism is madness in that sense. But the bottom line is, the Chinese people have demonstrated over the decades that it stands on the side of humanity, it stands on the side of history, and that they will win. And that for me, Omawale Clay, the chair of the December 12th movement now, and for many of you who knew our comrade, Sister Viola Plummer, who passed this year, she would say to our Chinese comrades, solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.